If you enjoy the harrowing of Minerva Damson and want to join the Order of Joan in their fight against the monsters stalking the trenches, there are several ways you can support the war effort. Find us on Patreon and enlist, or donate to the Order on Acast. You can also connect with Order headquarters via Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Links can be found in our bio. The Harrowing of Minerva Damson is a horror podcast and contains descriptions of war that some may find graphic or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burgess wasn't exactly as exotic to Gabby's eyes as, say, the great Malian imperial city of Timbuktu or the lofty, frigid heights of Kathmandu would have been, but it was plenty different enough. History seemed just about everywhere she looked, from the stone streets and walls with medieval crenellations to the fancy, pastel-colored, cake-like buildings adorning the major streets. In light of all that, Gabby expected the Burgess Order post to be just as grand. An old castle tower, maybe, or an elaborate estate. That was decidedly not the case. For starters, it was only slightly larger than the other stone and timber homes surrounding it. Its ground floor wasn't really a floor at all, just a series of stone columns supporting the two stories above. Half the space between the columns had been converted to a stable, currently empty but for a young boy sitting on an overturned bucket peeling an apple with his knife. A series of rickety wooden steps led up to an unassuming door, where there hung the only hint that this was the Order's post, in the form of a plainly made copper plaque bearing a sword and lily crossed, their features almost lost beneath the sign's green patina. Sister Bimnit noticed Gabby staring and paused, one foot on the first step.
"Oh!" Gabby started forward, shaking her head. I imagined... Well, is this what all order posts look like over here?
Not all of them, Bimnit said, climbing again. They come in all shapes and sizes, from all periods and purposes. This one was a granary before it was given to the order in the 18th century, or so I'm told. It's not uncommon for regional posts to be old barns or mills or farmhouses adapted for our needs. She favored Gabby with a rare, knowing smile. They can't all be repurposed hunting lodges and manors and cloisters. Gabby couldn't say that she wasn't a bit disappointed by this turn of events, but she shrugged it off. She'd made do with less before, and found there was actually quite a bit less could do. And it was a good thing she was a firm believer in that philosophy, because before the sun had set on her first day in Bulgaria, it became clear that less was all the order could give Gabby just then. A lot less. When Gabby's mama had arranged help for her daughter, Gabby was sure they had both pictured the same thing. Two big women, tall and strong, muscled like oxen, stubborn as mules, war-hardened and formidable in their persimmon coats, each toting long swords and probably smoking cigarettes or chewing chaw like was common amongst the cowboys and other folk who roughed it on the range. Essentially, good, sound knights who knew their business and had slain their share of monsters and might have done this one in themselves if not for that pesky business of its deadly gaze. But the two order personnel that she had been assigned clashed violently with that, in retrospect, overly optimistic expectation. And honestly, Gabby could kick herself for not seeing it sooner, the difference between order knights and order personnel. It was a notable one. Jostling on the bench alongside her in a rumbling truck bed was the first such person, a leathery old woman by the name of Bogomila. She was thinner and meaner looking than a dry switch, but also might be just about as breakable, judging from her almost white hair, missing teeth, and hunched stature. But she was wearing the persimmon coat of a knight, and she was carrying a spear of all things like she knew how to use it, or had known once upon a time.
She didn't speak a word of English or Spanish, but Sister Bimnett had explained that she'd been a big deal around these parts half a century ago, and that she knew the area where the cockatrice was last seen better than anybody else available. So Gabby should count herself lucky she'd been willing to come out of retirement for this. On the bench across from Gabby sat her other... well, she wasn't rightly sure what to call him. Assistant? Guard? Maybe guide was best. At any rate, she'd been shocked to find that her other guide was a boy. Or a young man, she supposed. A sworn agent, boys were called when they joined the order. Something Gabby hadn't known a boy could or would do. He was tall and sturdy, but sour-looking. His mouth was pinched like he'd sucked on a lemon, and one thick forelock of his dark hair drooped over his brow into his eyes. Stravko was his name, which was a mouthful of consonants Gabby'd never had occasion to pronounce smushed together like that, but there was something appealing about the sound. Somewhere in the course of his young life, Stravko had picked up Spanish, though it was Spain Spanish, not the Texas kind. He was there to act as interpreter between her and Bogomila, and as an extra pair of hands, should they need it. He had a rifle braced between his legs and a hatchet belted at his hip. It had a steel head imprinted with the order's seal, the only hint it might be enchanted. They hit another bump in the road that bucked them all off their seats for a moment, and Gabby let out a squeak. Her backside had gone numb from the engine's constant vibration through the metal bed, but that lurch knocked some painful feeling back into her bones.
"This thing kicks worse than a Missouri mule,"
she complained with a little laugh, trying to break the silence that had refused to let up since they'd crawled into this metal washtub on wheels. Bogomila looked from her to Stravko, asked him a quick question that must have been about what she'd said. The jerk simply shrugged, not even bothering to uncross his arms, which had been crossed practically since they'd met, and leaned his head back to close his eyes once more. As if anybody could sleep in this darn rattle trap. Gabby tightened her jaw and delivered him a sharp kick to the shin. His eyes flew open with an indignant yelp. She glared at him wordlessly, because she was sure he knew exactly what he'd done to earn that, and he glared unapologetically back.
"Ain't your job to translate?"
he shrugged, scowling.
"If you say something worth translating."
Whatever biting thing she was gearing up to say back, and had only half thought through, was lost as the truck came to an abrupt stop that nearly hurled them all from their seats into a heap up against the cab. Once it was clear the truck was well and truly stopped, Bogomila straightened her pack, grasped her spear, and, grunting, pushed past Gabby to exit the vehicle. As she thrust back the canvas flap, she tossed Gabby a disinterested look and said something gruffly. At Gabby's pointed look, Stravko reluctantly translated,
"She says this is as far as the truck will go. We ride from here."
A trio of industriously smoking men in brown uniforms waited for them at the roadside, the reins of just as many horses held in hand. The driver stepped from the truck cab with his own fresh cigarette pinched in his mouth and greeted the soldiers tersely. All of them looked impatient to be on their way. The horses weren't the finest specimens Gabby had ever clapped eyes on, but their conformations were sturdy enough for trail riding. A red dun, a blood bay, and a gunpowder gray, all packed and saddled up, ready to ride. Beyond the truck, a hump of rolling ridges rose, covered over with spring-budding trees. Some were already unfurling bright green leaves to the butter-yellow sun, a pretty sight to be sure. But, Gabby reflected, each new leaf also provided plenty of cover for lurking dangers. Bogomila finished her inspection of the animals and uttered a word that Gabby didn't need a translator to know was a foul one. Frowning, Gabby re-examined them, but couldn't see what had disappointed the old knight so badly it made her cuss. When her questioning look to Stravko was met with silence, she prompted him,
"Say, what's she so mad about?"
He barely glanced at her when he answered,
"They're not war horses."
As if that were perfectly obvious. Bogomila barked something to the soldiers, and whatever she'd said, it straightened out their backs and wiped the insolent grimaces from their faces. One rushed forward to offer her a hand up on the bay. Bogomila batted it away and hauled herself into the saddle. Gabby claimed the gunpowder gray, slipping her rifle into its saddle scabbard before swinging herself up. From her lofty perch on its back, she had a great view of Stravko struggling with his gun as it flattened its ears and snapped at him. He shied away with a curse. The men laughed, and Bogomila shouted irritably as he tried, and failed, to get on the temperamental animal, much to the amusement of the other men. Now, Gabby wasn't above watching a jackass flounder. In her experience, a little bit of humiliation went a long way to correct that behavior. But only to a certain point. After that, it started to look a lot like bullying, and she didn't much care for bullies. With Stravko's third failed attempt and another gale of laughter from the onlookers, she spurred her gray forward, grabbed the dun's reins, and held it in place for Stravko. Sullen and red-cheeked, he pulled himself into the saddle and snatched the reins from Gabby without so much as a thanks. Bogomila, her age-lined eyes narrowed, shook her head and turned her horse toward the low mountains, setting out without another word to the soldiers or either of her companions. The bass rumble of the truck faded, and nothing but birdsong and the steady thud of their horses' hooves on the soft ground replaced it. It was sure nice to return to the saddle after so long at sea and that heinously bumpy ride in that truck, but Gabby couldn't quite settle. The scenery was vernal and pleasant, but it was then that all the stories of the cockatrice Bimnit told her underwent a disturbing transformation, metamorphosing from the distantly abstract to the possibly, even probably, certainly uncomfortably, real. How long till we enter the cockatrice's territory? Gabby expected Stravko to relay her question to Bogomila, but he answered her himself.
Not long. It was sighted once a few months ago, just beyond that ridge ahead, but it seems to prefer hunting in a valley to the southeast. It won't take us a day to reach it.
So soon? Something fluttered in Gabby's stomach, and she couldn't quite parse whether it was excitement or nerves. She gripped her reins tighter. Stravko jerked his chin toward the old knight ahead of them.
She'll know a good spot to set up.
To set up camp?
He snorted.
To trap the monster. Lure it to you so you can.
He swept a disdainful eye over her, his gaze lingering for a moment on the rifle attached to the saddle.
Do your job, if you can.
Gabby's pride pricked at that.
Of course I can. I haven't missed a single straight shot since I was 11 or a trick shot since 14. I'm the bane of coyotes and snakes the county over.
Color rose again in Stravko's cheeks, and his expression, already hard, became cutting.
This is no snake or coyote.
I know that. I was just...
And thinking it so just proves how goddamn screwed we are. You have no experience with monsters. All the others did. And they all died. And now the Order's hopes are what? Pinned on a little girl with a gun on her very first mission, a washed-up old woman with a sharpened stick, and me. All riding horses with no combat training, and we're supposed to...
He was angry.
Guns,
but more than that, Gabby realized he was scared. Which, granted, seemed warranted from all she'd heard. Thinking on it now, she supposed she wouldn't be comforted by what she'd just said. But it just wouldn't do to have him get all squirrely on her, especially considering what they were about to face. That, and his horse was picking up on his excitable state and acting twitchy.
I do, too, have monster experience, she interrupted. I just so happened to have shot myself a chupacabra once that was going after our livestock.
Stravko sputtered to a confused stop.
Goat sucker? What the hell is that?
Gabby launched into a description of the fearsome critter, emphasizing its most dangerous attributes and, yes, taking creative liberties here and there. Heck, for all she knew, chupacabras really were the size of bears and could carry off young steers in their jaws. She'd never seen one. But Stravko didn't need to know that. He only needed to believe in her, enough to keep himself together until she could get the job done. Or they were all dead, and then it wouldn't matter. When she was finished, Stravko eyed her suspiciously.
You're lying.
Am not,
she said, easy as you please. Gabby'd had a lot of practice bluffing to get into and out of trouble. Besides, most lies were nothing but stories, and all stories held a kernel of truth. Was a chupacabra really so different from a rabid coyote? doubt crept into the lines around Stravko's mouth, but when he opened it to speak again, Bogomila said something sharp and he snapped it shut. He didn't have to translate for Gabby to understand. It was time to tread lightly. They'd entered the cockatrice's territory.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
As they trekked deeper into the woods, Gabby couldn't help but feel a growing sense of foreboding. It wasn't connected to the fact that she'd soon come face to face with a monster. She'd already had that thought and made her peace with it. No, it was that the more she surveyed the landscape, the more she realized it just wouldn't do. Not for what she needed to do. Goliad, in general, was a flat, open place. She was used to prairie, with brushy creeks and the occasional live oak moss interrupting the flatlands. Here the terrain rolled and the trees were growing taller and closer together the further south they went. It wasn't like Gabby hadn't been hunting a time or two back home. She knew enough about how to track an animal through the trees and bring it home for dinner. But hunting was straight shooting. She'd never done a trick shot in a place so densely foliated. It'd always been fields and corrals before. After some deliberating, she finally decided she needed to say something. It did not go well. Once Stravko had relayed her message, his face beat red with temper, Bogomila had drawn her horse up sharply and turned around. For the first time, she seemed to really look at Gabby. Her age-lined eyes were brown, ringed with blue, the expression behind them talon sharp. It was the kind of cold, hard look only a woman with a lifetime of practice could give, the kind that could cut a person down to size with a glance. And Gabby was getting a lot more than a glance. Bogomila's voice was gruff when she spoke.
"She's asking whether you are a fraud,"
Stravko translated. Heat flashed up Gabby's neck and cheeks like a brush fire. Under the older woman's withering gaze, she felt like a schoolchild caught out in misbehavior. Over the years and the many, many misadventures she'd undertaken, Gabby had developed a thick skin against any such matronly scorn. But somehow, Bogomila's glare cut through all those calluses and bit right down to the quick.
Of course I'm not. I just want to get this done right the first time, and to do that, it'd be best if I had open ground.
Her words, relayed through Stravko, had some effect, but sadly not the one she dearly hoped for. The elder knight's hot ire cooled to a special kind of contempt, the one Gabby had seen particularly shrewish church ladies give to younger folks whom they fancied woefully ignorant. She could all but hear the, "Life'll teach 'em soon enough, the poor dears. Bless their hearts." After a moment, Bogomila spoke, flicking her hand dismissively as she did, and angled her horse back around toward their unseen destination.
"She says that life doesn't hand out perfect conditions, so monsters won't accommodate your needs,"
Stravko said reluctantly, his hands tight on the reins.
"The monster is in the forest. You will make your shot in the forest. That is all there is to say."
He jerked his horse around to follow Bogomila, leaving Gabby there feeling like she'd just swallowed a wriggling frog. She wasn't a fraud, and it wasn't like she was asking for perfect conditions, simply better ones. But then again, Bogomila was a career knight. Gabby had no doubt she'd killed monsters. The only real question was how many, and she was sure the answer was a fair piece. Anyway, certainly more than Gabby's none. Who between the two of them knew the trade better? Sure, she might know a thing or two about monsters, Gabby reckoned, but I know just as much about marksmanship. Whose expertise, then, should guide this expedition? Mine, her gut screamed. But, with a twinge of guilt, Gabby remembered her mama's many scoldings against indulging her bigger-than-her-britches ego amongst people older and wiser than herself. She could make the shot in these hills and trees, couldn't she? She was a ranch gal, born and raised by frontiersmen who grew up tough on unforgiving country. "We make do with what we have," her uncle always said. Surely she could make do. That didn't stop that frog from wriggling something awful in her belly as she nudged her horse to follow. They skirted the edge of the cockatrice's range for another 2 hours in silence, except for when Bogomila directed Stravko to tell Gabby they wouldn't risk a confrontation so late in the day. She'd position them so they could camp for the night, then head straight to the spot she had in mind to spring their trap in the morning. Gabby wasn't sure which was more aggravating, the nearness of the event or the waiting. In only a few hours, she'd be facing her first real monster as part of her first mission as a knight. It was a surreal thought. She'd never considered becoming a knight, though, looking back, she wondered why. Maybe it was because she knew it would take her far away from Santi before she'd had her chance. But then he'd gone off to war an ocean away anyway, and that was a damn inconvenience to her efforts to convince him they should just go ahead and get married already. Sometimes a gal had to take matters into her own hands. Idly, she reached into her coat pocket and ran her thumb over one of three small objects she'd been given at the Burgess post before they'd rushed her out the door. Three bullets, specially made by the Order's weaponsmiths just for her, she'd been told. They were magic, enchanted for accuracy and extra penetrating power to punch through the cockatrice's thick hide. She hadn't expected to be given anything like that. Three seemed both too many and too few. Why make only three? Bimnit had explained, briskly, that unlike conventional bullets, these bullets had taken 2 weeks each to craft. They were experimental and time-consuming to make, so she should be glad to have so many. Of course, she'd only need one, but she wondered how those dames made them. She knew a thing or two about making her own ammunition. Sometimes she'd make special weights for other people too, something folks who could afford it paid well for. That's how she'd got to spending so much quality time with Santi. He'd come up after school one day and asked if she'd teach him. He'd paid her, though truthfully it hadn't occurred to Gabby to ask him for anything, and she'd secretly given him a steep discount. It was worth every lost penny. They'd spent long spring afternoons working together in her backyard, under the weight of her mother's watchful eye from the kitchen window. Then a few more bright weeks of summer before he'd gone off to train for war. She hoped their lessons had done him some good. To make custom ammunition for any gun meant lots of test batches and lots of shooting to find the ideal balance for any particular piece. Under her tutelage, Santi'd become a crack shot, and that might just be what was needed to tip the chances in favor of his survival. When Bogomila, Stravko, and Gabby stopped to make camp, the moody silence that had hung over them all afternoon deepened. Bogomila announced that she and Stravko would take watches through the night. It was Gabby's job, she fairly growled, to be well rested for tomorrow. And if that was Gabby's job, she failed miserably. She tossed and turned all night, her heart fluttering in her chest and her mind racing, snakes and chupacabras chasing her through the few restless dreams she had. And then, before she knew it was dawn. Stravko passed out their breakfast ration. Bogomila saddled and slipped blinkered bridles onto the horses, and Gabby fixed the mirror to the butt of her rifle and loaded the magic rounds into its magazine over her regular bullets. The Order's bullets felt heavier than the ammunition she'd made and packed for her Winchester, but they were spelled for accuracy. Hopefully, that would make up for any drop in velocity their weight might cause. Normally, she only needed one shot, but she loaded two of the special bullets on account of the less than ideal conditions. She kept the third in reserve. It'd make a dandy souvenir. Their destination was a small glade amongst the trees deep in the forested slopes. Overnight, more leaves had unfurled from their tight buds, increasing the canopy cover and reducing visibility. The woods here, though, weren't anything like the few Gabby was familiar with back home, with their tendency to be brush-choked. The ground was clear of both brambles and saplings between the old, thick trees. That helped ease Gabby's mind as she slipped silently from her saddle and tied her horse to the tree Bogomila indicated. She tied the reins around the trunk in a quick-release knot. It was Thravko's job to be the spotter and, apparently, a reserve gun. Rifle slung over his shoulder, he climbed up a tree near the clearing's edge and settled on a branch some 9 feet off the ground. Gabby, dubious of his marksmanship, wasn't sure she much cared to have him watching her back. Bogomila led her own horse, stripped of tack, through the bright green stand of grass currently taking advantage of the pool of sunlight unclaimed by mature trees. A small sapling, only perhaps 2 yards tall, grew at its center, and she lashed her steed to it. The horse had enough lead to dip its head, and it eagerly began cropping at the lush, grassy carpet. The old knight patted its flank once before retreating again to the clearing's edge, trudging up to where her spear and equipment rested against an outcropping of rocks jutting up from the earth. She met Gabby's eyes and indicated the rocks with a wave, which was enough for Gabby to figure that was where she was expected to make her shot. The outcropping, jagged as teeth, was bisected by a cleft just large enough for her to settle into and still be able to heft her rifle into position. Cover enough, Gabby decided. The best on offer, really. After a little fiddling with her mirror and a deep breath, she nodded up to Bogomila. Returning her nod, the older woman took up her spear. She was a fearsome sight just then. It seemed to Gabby she was suddenly younger, stronger, the grim determination in her expression sanding away all her wrinkles and leaving the hard grit of experience behind. Gabby knew then that, more than swords, this was what the Order forged best. Monster Slayers. Here, truly, for the first time, she was seeing a knight. Bogomila surveyed the clearing and the surrounding woods once more, then put her fingers to her mouth and let forth an explosive whistle. The horses jerked and snorted. Birds lurched up from the trees, wheeling and crying in alarm. Something skittered further into the trees with a flash of rust-colored pelt. When Gabby looked again at where Bogomila had just been, the older woman had disappeared, vanished further into the trees without a sound. The forest, rudely interrupted for that split second, settled again over the course of the next few minutes. And then they waited, Gabby between her rocks, Thravko in his tree, and Bogomila wherever she'd prowled off to. The horses sighed and twitched, irritated by spring flies. Songbirds settled back into the canopy. As time crawled on, Gabby caught sight of deer moving between the trees and squirrels searching the forest floor for hidden caches. She shifted, the coarse texture of the rock scraping against her coat, and fought a surge of lethargy. That sleepless night was catching up to her, her initial nerves melting as time dragged on and nothing more exciting happened than a brief spat between warring squirrels. The sun was warm where it broke through the trees, and the rock cleft wasn't so uncomfortable. In the peace of the glade, her eyelids began to droop, until she was jerked back to consciousness by that peri-slumber falling sensation. Heart pounding in her chest, she shook her head. Peeking above her, she caught sight of Thravko. His eyelids were half closed, his head slowly falling forward before he caught himself and blinked rapidly. He glanced at her, saw her watching him, and glared, unhappy to be caught dozing. Gabby stifled a spiteful grin. Really, she shouldn't take such contrarian joy in knowing she wasn't the only one slacking off. She should be angry at both herself and him. This was a life-or-death situation, after all. Even if it didn't feel like it. She turned her attention firmly back to the mirror's reflection and slowly panned the rifle butt left and right. She was on her third pan when an unusual flash of movement caught her eye. Distant still, but distinct from the soft glow of fur or the quick flitting of birds from one branch to the next. a glossy green shimmer passing through the dappled sunlight. Gabby stiffened, her pulse ticking up. From where he sat up in his tree, she heard Stravko shift uneasily. The horses snuffled the air, their ears pricked forward. The bait horse in the clearing shivered and backed up, drawing its lead taut. A breathless hush fell over the forest. No bird sang, no insect trilled. There was only the breeze ruffling through the leaves and the blood pounding in Gabby's ears. The cockatrice entered the clearing with a scream and a burst of scales and feathers. Despite its brightly colored plumage and scales, Gabby's keen eye lost track of it for a crucial moment, not because it was fast, though it was certainly fast, but because of the way it moved, and because Gabby's mind was still trying to understand what exactly she was seeing. It was like a chicken the size of a bull, only its riot of brown, red, and black green feathers ended where its neck met its scaly green body. Its wings were webbed, its long tail thick and tipped with a heavy rattle, and its powerful armored legs ended in wicked talons as long as her forearms. And its eyes. In the mirror's reflection, its eyes. She struggled to make sense of them. They burned without fire, blazed without light, but still they seared. They sizzled like cattle brands against flesh. They flashed and cut and flayed. She had the strangest sensation, like all her hair was standing on end, like she was standing outside in an electric storm, and the air was becoming thick and charged. And wasn't she supposed to do something when that happened? Wasn't she supposed to be doing something? Wasn't she supposed to be...
Gabriella!
Gabby blinked. From his perch, Stravko called her
Gabriella!
Name again.
Gabriella!
In the mirror's reflection, the horse was pulling against its lead as hard as it could. The cockatrice was sizing it up, pacing left and right as it examined the meal trussed up for it, clearly suspecting a trap. Hearing Stravko's voice, it cocked its head, its baleful eyes searching the trees. Its sharp beak parted, and a snake's tongue darted out to taste the air. Gabby's palms were sweaty. The moving target she'd shot over her shoulder at the county fair hadn't been anything like this. Didn't move like the cockatrice did, kind of like a chicken, which she'd never shot before because that would be a waste of a perfectly good bullet and ruin the meat to boot. And all that to say, it was proving mighty difficult to line up a shot. But she aimed, and she took it. The cockatrice moved just as she was pulling the trigger, and what was meant to be a clean shot through the brain pan nicked the red comb above its eye instead. Nicked it, when she knew the shot should have hit it dead on. It should have punched right through that bright, plump flesh. But it hadn't. Even with magic, it hadn't. The cockatrice screamed. Gabby swore. She worked her Winchester's lever action, the spent cartridge flying out and pinging against the stone. The monster's horrible eyes swiveled her way and locked onto her spot between the rocks. With a mad lurch, it started for her. As it passed the horse, it turned its head and let forth a spray of yellow mist. The horse squealed, its skin shivering where the gas touched it, before its legs all buckled at once and it fell, dead, into the grass.
Damn it.
Gabby swore and swore again,
Shit.
Her mind stuttering. If its hide was so thick even the magic bullets couldn't penetrate it, how could she... It was closing on her fast. If she didn't do something soon... Oh, God... It was close enough now for her to feel its footfalls through the earth. In the mirror, its eyes blazed, its feathers shone, its beak parted, and a spear tip thrust up in its path, skittering off its thick skin in a spray of sparks. It reeled back with a hiss, and Bogomila roared. Its long neck snaked toward the night, and she whipped the spear around and slammed its shaft across the cockatrice's head. Brain and hands reconnecting, Gabby took quick aim. It stepped back, opened its craw. Her shot rang out a split second after Stravko's did. His bullet ricocheted off its neck feathers. It stumbled a fraction. Gabby's bullet struck its lower jaw, missing the opening of its throat and the brainstem behind it that she had been aiming for. Still, the creature shrieked, and a sudden flow of yellow liquid gushed from its jaw, instantly curling and withering the grass it struck below. Gabby's bullet had punctured its venom sacs. But the damn thing was still alive, and she only had one magic bullet left. This wasn't going to work. Her instincts had been right. She should have insisted on open ground. She should have never given in. Gabby scrabbled at her pockets, feeling for the final bullet, before just as abruptly freezing. No. She only had one shot left. She'd be damned if she was fool enough to waste it here. She opened her mouth to shout a retreat when she saw, in the mirror's reflection, the moment Bogomila made a fatal mistake. She was fighting with her head angled down, trying to avoid meeting the monster's deadly eyes. The cockatrice swung its tail at her, bludgeon-like rattle gleaming in the sunlight, and she dodged it. But she didn't regain her balance in time to avoid a sweep of the monster's wing. It caught her in the side, throwing her halfway across the glade. She hit the ground hard at an angle, her head smacking against the earth. She was still even as the cockatrice whirled and sprang after her, giant wings spread wide, taloned feet ripping up the soil. The knight was dead, Gabby realized. Either from the strike, the fall, or from whatever the cockatrice was about to do that Gabby had no means or time to prevent. But she and Stravko could still live to fight another day. She didn't hesitate. With that galvanizing thought, she slung her rifle over her shoulder, shot to her feet, vaulted over the rock, and pelted toward her horse. Behind her came the sounds of the cockatrice stomping and crowing, along with a terrible, wet, dripping sound. Gabby's bray was shying, rearing, pulling against its own lead, but bless it, when she neared, it pressed all four hooves into the ground and stood still long enough for her to pull the quick release knot free and throw herself into the saddle. It fought her, whites of its eyes rolling as she kicked it towards Stravko's tree instead of immediately letting it run away from the glade and the monster it harbored.
"Stravko!"
Gabby shouted up at him. The whites of his eyes were showing, too, as he watched whatever was happening in the clearing, his skin white as cotton.
"Jump down!"
If she could just get him to his horse, they could flee. If she could just get him down. Far too slowly, he ripped his gaze from the clearing and looked down at her. He shook his head wordlessly. Gabby firmed her jaw. With all the authority she could muster, she bellowed,
"Get your ass down here now!"
That did the trick. His joints, stiff with fear, suddenly unlocked. In a scramble of limbs and firearms, he swung down from the tree and onto the gray's rump. She jerked the horse around, searching for where Stravko's red dun was tethered, but Stravko's arms closed, vice-like, around her middle, and he yelled,
"Go now!"
in her ear. Her horse didn't even wait for her to spur it. It surged forward, just as Gabby heard the sound of a large body crashing through tall grass and leaves behind them. Terror gripped her as surely as it had her horse. She let it have its head and leaned forward as it crashed through the trees, Stravko curling over her. The sounds of pursuit, of hissing and strange avian clicks neared and then veered off suddenly as they plunged down an abrupt slope. The horse lost its footing, stumbled in a splaying confusion of legs and gravity. Together, Gabby and Stravko were hurled from the saddle, falling into last autumn's leaf litter and rolling. The horse lost its own battle to stay upright and tumbled after them. Sky, trees, ground, all swirled around Gabby's head, sound crashing in her ears. And then she hitched up against something hard and, for a horrible moment, the world went white with pain, before closing to black.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Harrowing of Minerva Damson and its related stories are written, narrated, and produced by Jessica Linkhart, and features additional voice work by Miranda Lewis, Claire Miller, and Jamie Sykes. Art assets done in collaboration with Mitch Lewis. Thank you for listening. Our tale will continue next week.